Good evening, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 5th, 2020, and I want to welcome you to Universal Energy Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Mary Jo Bull, and I am the host of this weekly podcast. Each week, I share spiritual principles honed over 30 years of study, personalization, and experience to help listeners reach a deeper understanding of our true identity, the meaning of life, and how we can harness, leverage the energy that creates worlds through our faculty of thought and emotion. I have been speaking on the principles of self-actualization and spiritual development for almost two decades now because I have witnessed and experienced how life gets better and better when we commit ourselves to working on a deeper connection to our life, to our soul, and to ourselves. Thanks to those who are joining tonight via the World Wide Web. Welcome. I hope that you hear something tonight that gives you some food for thought. In the coming week, we are in a very important time in the evolution of humanity right now, and I hope the information that you'll hear on these podcasts will help you with that. For those who are listening by phone, if you have a question, you can click one on your phone to indicate to me that you would like to be directly connected to me in the studio. I'll open up your mic, tell me your first name, where you're calling from, and you can ask your question. For those who are listening via the web, if you have a question, you can text me directly at 703-943-9705. Again, include your first name and where you're from along with your question, and I'll do my best to answer that during tonight's podcast. And if we can't get to it tonight, I'll do my best to respond to it in coming podcasts. How about that? So tonight I want to talk with you about what I like to think of as the art of allowing. Art of allowing. So if you've listened to these podcasts, these past 6 months, I guess it's been almost, maybe seven, you will recall that these weekly podcasts are giving you more information about who you are innately, who we all are innately, where we come from, the inner faculties that are available to each and every one of us so that we can sort of experience our world and decide what we like, what we don't like, discern our preferences, and create life experiences that fill us with joy and peace. And understanding the art of allowing versus versus the state of resistance, the opposite of allowing, is key to receiving events, conditions, circumstances, relationships that we have been offering a preference about our whole life, whether we know it or not. So to start tonight's podcast, I want to read to you an excerpt that I have read in previous podcasts before. This excerpt from a book called The I Am Discourses very succinctly and clearly defines who we are, where we come from, and how we tap into and leverage this energy that creates worlds to create experiences for ourselves. So here is this excerpt. Life in all its activities everywhere manifest is God in action. It is only through lack of the understanding of applied thought and feeling that mankind is constantly interrupting, resisting, the pure flow of that perfect essence of life, which would, without interference or resistance, naturally express its perfection everywhere. The natural tendency of life is love, peace, beauty, harmony, and opulence. For life cares not who uses it, but is constantly surging to pour more of its perfection into manifestation, always with that lifting process, which is ever inherent within itself. We are, each one of us, God expressing itself, material world, on this material plane. And as this excerpt states, if we, as we come to understand thought, what it is, where it comes from, does, and we come to understand feeling, what it is, what it does, where it comes from, as we pursue an understanding of these two inner faculties, we align directly, we can align directly with that innate well-being that is us. As this excerpt says, without any resistance, without any interference, that well-being is constantly flowing. Constantly flowing. We offer resistance in a number of different ways. And that's all right. It really is. It really is okay. Because the more we understand what we don't want, the clearer we get about what we do want. And the clearer we get about what we do want, the stronger that alignment with our source is, and the more we are in a state of allowing those, again, conditions, circumstances, relationships, we have discerned a preference for. There's a simple way to know whether we are aligned with our source or we're not, whether we are allowing that free-flowing well-being or we are resisting free-flowing well-being. It's a very, very simple way to know that. And that is where the faculty of emotion and feeling comes in. When we are in alignment with what is ours by divine right, when we are in a state of allowing, we feel peaceful, calm, hopeful, optimistic, happy, faithful, love, joy, ecstasy, any of those good feeling emotions. That's how you can know whether you're allowing or you're resisting. If you're feeling uncomfortable, if you're feeling worried, doubtful, impatient, fearful, scared, those emotions can indicate to us, and they're meant to get our attention so that in the moment we can, as we grow in our awareness, as we grow in our understanding, we can stop and ask ourselves, what was I just focusing on? There are emotions that we experience in the moment that perhaps don't lend themselves to that moment of hesitation, that moment of checking ourselves. And those emotions in those moments are likely appropriate. There is a time for being angry. There's a time for feeling a sense of injustice. There's a time for grief and sadness and resentment. You know, those emotions have a place. They have a place. And as a human, a spiritual being having a human experience, which is what all of us are, is, it's important to allow those feelings to process through your experience. When we don't allow those feelings to process through our experience, they can get stuck. Those emotions can get stuck, ultimately in our physicality, and they can lead to illness and disease. So we'll talk on another podcast about those appropriate responses to immediate responses to situations, because again, those are appropriate. The I guess what you'd call negative emotions that I'm talking about tonight are more about an inner mindset, if you will, that isn't in harmony with the truth of who we are. And the negative emotions that are usually some sort of speculation or judgment or bad habit. All of those are negative emotions that can be pivoted to a point where we're recognizing what it is that we are either worried about, judging, in the bad habit of, and we can pivot those. But it takes some practice. It takes some awareness. And it takes commitment of us when we are in a state of discomfort. I'm trying to use language that is not greatly provocative, but also illustrates those range of emotions that we might feel. When we're in a state of discomfort, we feel that the reason that we feel uncomfortable always is not confirmation that what we are focused on or thinking in the moment is true. Those negative emotions are not confirmation. We have been designed this way because, as it turns out, human beings will pay a lot more attention to something that makes them feel bad for a longer period of time than to something that makes them feel good. It sounds whack, but it's true. Think back over something that you wished for a long time, something that you really wanted, and you got it. It manifested in your life. How long did it take before you were on to the next thing? Whereas negative emotion is something that we have not an affection or an affinity, but it seems to take precedence in our life more often than not. I'm going to give you an example that might make you think a little bit. I have been a single mom since my daughter was 14 months old. It's pretty much just been the two of us. And there were years when things were difficult. But then things got better. And my daughter is a very smart, capable, beautiful, intelligent young woman who lives with an anxiety disorder. So, as her mom, I want to make sure that when I connect with her via FaceTime or by phone, that the conversation that we have is happy and uplifting. She's 27 years old, and those of you who have children around that age, especially mothers with daughters around that age, you know that this is an age of individuation for them, and they're kind of doing their own thing. They've got friends that you probably have never met. They might be in a relationship. They're performing, you know, their job, they're doing their thing, and you don't have necessarily the day-to-day, moment-by-moment connection with them at that age that you did when they were younger. So you want the experience, when they do connect with you, to be happy and uplifting, because they're kind of like little fawns, you know. You don't want to scare them off. So I found that I had to be much more conscious about the things that the topics that I would bring up with my daughter, the questions that I would ask. And in the process of being more aware of that, what I came to realize was, oh my gosh, many of us are in relationships with relatives, loved ones, friends that are based on some form of pain or conflict, or drama, or trauma. And when we become aware of that, and I made the decision, I don't want that to be the basis for our relationship. I want her to call me when she's happy and excited. I want her to call me, you know, if she needs something. She wants someone to talk to. Obviously, I'm there. And I'm there for her. But it made me very aware that much of what we've talked about over the years is based in some sort of drama or lack. So looking for topics to discuss or ways to connect with her that wouldn't inflame the anxiety disorder that she lives with was really challenging for me. And that was eye-opening. That was really eye-opening. It took me down a couple of rabbit holes. The first of which, the most prominent of which has been, where else do I do that in my life? Where else am I perpetuating drama and trauma because I want to keep the connection with someone? What other relationships in my life are based on, you know, trauma and drama? And how much do I contribute to that? And it's taken me a little bit of time, but I've started to shift that and look for happier, more pleasant ways to be connected to people that I really care about and who aren't necessarily on the same page that I am in terms of spiritual learning and understanding, but I want to maintain those connections. So that's been a real task of inner self-inquiry. It also made me, when I started to really pay attention and honor that feeling faculty, that's when things really started to shift for me. Because when I felt uncomfortable, I knew I had to look to my thoughts. What was I focusing on? What was I thinking about? And I found myself to be quite critical and quite judgy of other people. Not all other people, certain specific other people. And I came to recognize that really wasn't serving me. This whole Judgy McJudgerson thing that I had going on. Perhaps my thoughts were true, but they weren't helpful. And they weren't going to change anything. So I've been working on, as soon as I, you know, feel that come up, as soon as I have that thought, rather than sort of taking off with it down the path, I will actually, in my mind, I will say to myself, stop doing that. That's not helpful. I actually asked a friend of mine who I've had many of these, you know, what I like to call twirled up conversations with. A couple of weeks ago, I met her for what we call car lunch, because during the pandemic, we're not going into restaurants or into bars. And so we devised this this way for the two of us to meet and have a conversation, but remain in our cars with a parking space between us. And we laughingly call it car lunch or car coffee. And we had this conversation the night before where I really got myself twirled up big time. And even as I was doing it, it was like, you know, this isn't helpful. This isn't what you want. What, you know, where are you going with this? So when we met for, I said, you know, I asked you to meet me here because I need your help with something. I need an accountability buddy. And she said, great, what can I do? And I said, you know how I got all worked up last night? She's like, yeah. And I said, you know, I do that more than I should. She's like, uh-huh. And I said, because she and I have known each other a long time and I really trust her, I said, when I start doing that, I want you to do me a favor. I want you, if we're face-to-face or we're on FaceTime or whatever, I want you to put your finger up to get my attention, and I want you to say to me, you're doing it again, to get my attention so that I will stop. And you know, I haven't done it. I haven't done it since I asked her to be my accountability buddy. I've really, really become hyper aware of that. And one of the reasons why I'm really devoted to changing this in myself is because there are things that I really desire for my life, and that aspect of my consciousness, it's just not worth it. What I could possibly delay or minimize and what I really want to create for myself, it's not worth it to have those moments of unconsciousness and criticism. So that is one way that we resist or interfere with the innate well-being that is flowing to us all the time. And in this modern world, especially a world of social media, where, I mean, it's what, 95% comparison, judgment, criticism of ourselves or other people. It's a challenge to get away from. You really have to be committed to your own mental health, and you have to be committed to your own happiness. Which leads me to another idea about how we cut ourselves off, if you will. We can't cut ourselves off completely, but how we can constrict that flow that's ours innately. And that is by arguing for our limitations. What do I mean by that? Well, I've mentored people over probably the last 10 or 12 years who are trying to change something in their life. And when they first come to me, they're in a state. I mean, I've been there. I've been in a state too. I get it. But they're in a state. And our first conversation is usually them giving me a ton of detail about what's going on specifically in their world or in their relationship that is causing them, they believe, is causing them problems. And very often, what I think, or at least I know in my case, what I often expected was the person I was talking to sort of get into a bitch session with me and confirm, yes, you know, this person is, you know, you can fill in your own expletive, and they shouldn't behave like that, and you deserve better, and conversations like that. And those are very self-perpetuating, right? Again, the trauma, the, you know, that connection. And of course, if you're in a situation where you're in danger of being harmed physically, that's a whole other conversation. That's not the sort of thing that I'm talking about now. If you're in a situation like that, then there's another level of help available to you. Some of what I share on my podcast, perhaps you will find useful, but I want you to understand that I recognize that there's another layer in situations like that. And that's not what I'm talking about tonight. What I'm talking about tonight is if you're in a relationship and you just feel like someone doesn't understand you, or you need something from them, they're not giving it to you. If you're in one role in the relationship and they're in a different role and you expect that they should behave a certain way and they aren't, oftentimes when we have those conversations with someone like myself who is in the mentor role, a good mentor, a good coach, a good guide, a good teacher will help you to recognize where you have control in the situation, but you're giving it up to someone else. And those are usually what I like to call the yeah, but conversations. Yeah, but he's not giving me what I need. Yeah, but he should be behaving this way. Yeah, but he promised blah, 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 or she promised blah, blah, blah. Those yeah, but conversations are arguing for your limitations, because 9 times out of 10, we can't control what the other person is doing. They're going to have their own reasons for their behavior. They're going to have their own reasons and their own filters that are going to lead them to the choices that they make. And if you are feeling a sense of suffering in that relationship, you believe that your suffering is a result of their behavior or their choices. And it isn't. That's not the reason for your suffering. But, yeah, but you will argue for that limitation. It's human nature to point fingers at the other because it's easier. It is easier. I will fully admit that. It is easier than to look inside ourselves, to give ourselves what we need, to make the changes inside, to give ourselves what we need. I think the reason many people don't do self-inquiry is they have a belief that once they start, it will just never stop, and they'll just get more and more attached to what complete and utter failures they believe themselves to be. And I can tell you from personal experience, that is not what will happen. When you take on and commit yourself to taking full and complete responsibility for your thoughts and your feelings, taking full and complete responsibility for the conditions currently active in your life, and then making the internal changes in your beliefs and your thoughts and your emotions, not only will it not take that long, usually, but you will get a sense of freedom and upliftment and hope that you will not be expecting, but it will show up. When I began doing my own inner work many years ago, it's been almost 30 years now, I remember a teacher telling me that I had chosen my family of origin, that I had picked my parents, that I had chosen my parents. And I was in a state of ignorance at the time, a state of unconsciousness at the time. I think I was still very much asleep to the truth of who I was. And I remember reacting and saying to this teacher, there is no way that that is true. I would not have picked these whack jobs to be my parents. And I meant it. But it stuck with me. It stuck with me. It stayed in the back of my mind. And I remember saying something very similar one day to my former husband. And the reason I offered this thought, this idea, this concept to him was because for me, it had been incredibly empowering. If I had chosen these people to be my parents, if I had chosen where I was going to be born, the conditions of my life, what religion I was going to be born into, what race I was going to be, what gender I was going to be, if I chose those things, that to me, my way of seeing things, was incredibly empowering. So if I chose that, I could choose something else. If I created this over here, I can create something else. Another way of looking at it was, if I chose these elements, I chose them for a purpose. I chose them for a very specific purpose because there's something specific I want to accomplish. From my perspective, that was incredibly empowering. My former husband did not see it that way. He saw it as, it's your fault. I mean, you picked him. You set all this up. It's your fault. You've got no one to blame but yourself. That, of course, is not at all what I was saying, but his inner filter, he had an experience in his childhood and in his life that his inner filter made him guilty and worthless and ashamed and, you can go on and on. And it's really challenging to get through those filters. People have those filters in place for a reason. Many of them, especially in the case of my former husband, they were a coping mechanism because of severe trauma that they encountered when they were young. And there will come a day, might not be in this lifetime, might not be in the next lifetime, but there will come a time when his soul is ready to explore that idea of self-empowerment. If you are in the place where you're ready to explore self-empowerment, one of the best things that you can do for yourself is to say, I am willing. You don't have to believe. You don't have to embrace this, accept it, you know, go, you know, to the mattresses, so to speak, with it. Just to be willing to hear it and believe it. I'm willing. I'm willing to hear it. I'm willing to believe it. Doesn't mean I do, but I'm willing to. That's all really that is required, honestly. Doing this inner work, making these inner changes. If you are saying to yourself, I want to change, I want to make that change, and then the next part of the sentence is, but I just don't think I can, I don't know how, that's usually the response. I know that, you know, over the years when I've been working with my own teacher, David, you know, when I'm at that very sort of crucial moment, I will say, you know, I don't know how. And he'll remind me, you don't have to know how. All you have to do is be willing. I'm willing. I'm willing to look at this. I'm willing to change this. I'm willing to empower myself. That's all you need to do. I'm willing. And something opens up in your consciousness that puts you, moves you toward or back into the state of allowing the innate well-being that is always present and always flowing through you. Willingness is like a gateway. It's like a doorway opens up. Willingness really is all you need. Something up in your consciousness. So, one way that we get ourselves back into a state of allowing is through the willingness. Another way that we get ourselves into a state of allowing is to recognize when we're looking at something that's making us uncomfortable. And if we can pivot that thought, or if we can reach for something that feels better, that's another way to put ourselves into a state of allowing. Sometimes there's a situation in front of you that you just, in that particular moment, you just can't get there. You know, you just, it's too big, or it seems too big. It seems too big. There's too many elements of it that you can't control. You know, sometimes that's just where you are. So that might be one of those cases where you just kind of have to let it work its way through. Find something else to focus on, to distract yourself from that feeling as much as you can, you know. They, you know, feelings, they ebb and they flow. And there's a lot going on in the world right now. And I know in the beginning of this lockdown, for the first couple of weeks, many people, myself included, were experiencing tremendous fluctuation in emotion and perspective. And, you know, there would be days that were spent in tears or just feeling very emotional. And then there would be days where things seemed okay. You know, they sort of leveled off. And then over time, you know, those emotional days seemed to get less and less, or they were shorter and shorter. Periods of feeling better, you know, would get a little bit longer, but then we'd get hit with another wave. It's almost like we were going through some sort of layers of programming or beliefs that we've been carrying around for a very long time. You know, our shadows were front and center for quite a long while. Some may even still be feeling that. I believe that we were sort of burning off the dross of what doesn't serve us. I believe that one of the silver linings in this current global pandemic is there is a the word I'm looking for. There is a process that each of us is undergoing. And some are, at least now, I don't know if they're from the very beginning or not, but are working with the process willingly, surrendering to it, being optimistic about it, hopeful about it, allowing the days where those are not the way that they're feeling, just allowing them, knowing that every day is a new day. So this process is happening. It's happening to all of us. We're not really being given a choice. The only choice we're being given is to trust or not, to surrender or resist, to be hopeful or to be pessimistic. Those are really the things that we can control. The only thing, honestly, the only things that we can control in our life experience is our thoughts and our emotions. Now, some would poo-poo those, like, you know, yeah, control your thoughts. I mean, what good is that going to do? That is going to change everything. This is controlling your thoughts, being aware of your thoughts and where you're out of alignment with the truth of who you are. Being aware of where you're out of that alignment is everything. When you change your thoughts and your focus, when you get very clear with yourself about what doesn't work for you anymore and what you do want to create in your life, that's when miracles happen. And I mean that. I'm not saying that flippantly. I'm not blowing sunshine up your skirt, so to speak. I mean that literally. That is when miracles happen. Every wisdom tradition and ancient wisdom teachings and writings on this planet all tell us we are from the world of spirit, that we are powerful through the faculty of thought and emotion, and that if we will align with the truth of who we are, which is love, that's where we come from. There is only one power in this universe. That's the power. I'm not even going to go into any more of a definition because it's undefinable. It's unlimited. It's eternal. There's only one power. When we are experiencing anything other than love, it's because of our own, what the Bible and A Course in Miracles refers to as our own vain imaginings. In the Bible, there's the story of Adam and Eve, and that, you know, the big thing they did wrong was, you know, God told them, do not eat from this tree of good and evil. That's the one thing, you know, one thing you don't do. And they did, and here we are. That's the way some spiritual traditions would put it. But personally, and from my own personal study over 20 to 30 years, I don't think that's exactly what happened. I think that when Source, when God desired to create what we see in front of us now, when God desired to create this world and to come into this world and experience it, there is an understanding that this material world is, initially at least when we first get here, there's a very specifically developed and programmed idea of separation. Separation from God, separation from each other, separation from our planet, from nature. And then you know, we come to a point at some point where we recognize we're not separate. We're not separate from each other. We're not separate from God, and we're not separate from the world and from nature. But that metaphor of eating from the tree of good and evil, when we come into this material carnal world and we forget the truth of who we are and we believe ourselves to be separate, that's a very frightening thing, because innately we know as human beings that there's a limit to what we are capable of doing on our own. And this is what gives rise to the idea of, you know, the narcissistic idea of, I'm going to get mine and I don't really care whether someone else gets theirs. I'm going to get mine before it's gone. And it gives rise to the idea of competition and dominance, which is what we've been experiencing for at least 4,000 years, possibly longer. When we come into an understanding that there is only one power, is the power of love, and when we are in alignment with it and connected to it and tapping into it and leveraging it via thought and feeling, we create a personal, individual, and global world of love and collaboration and cooperation and community. You know, gone are the days of dominance and competition and, you know, survival of the fittest. It's key to integrate into our concept of the world that we have been experiencing through our physical senses, that we are also spiritual. In fact, we are more spiritual, we're more spirit than we are material. In fact, science, quantum science, has actually proven that. That's not, you know, what some like to call airy-fairy New Age talk. That's actually been proven by scientists. We are more spirit than we are material. I know I've said this in previous podcasts. If you take your hand and put it under the lens of a very high-powered microscope and you dial into the highest magnifying power of that piece of equipment, what you'll find is there's nothing there. Little photons of light, little atoms of photons of light. There's no bone, there's no flesh, there's no blood, there's no fascia, there's just empty space. The first lines in the book of Genesis, in the first book of the Bible, tells us that God created what we are experiencing now as this world through thought and emotion. If you will go back and pull out your Bible, if you have it, or Google it, and just look at the first, you know, couple of chapters of Genesis, the first chapter, first few verses. It talks about God, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, but then it goes on to talk about the earth being void. Well, when we create something, isn't there something there of some substance, like, you know, matter, like what you can touch with your physical senses? Not yet. You go on to read that scripture, and it's very evident that everything was a thought first. In fact, everything is a thought. You know, there are those in certain spiritual traditions who believe that we live in the mind of God. We are all ideas in the mind of God. So if when you integrate into your personal view of the world that you are mostly spirit. You come from the world of spirit. Thought comes from the world of spirit. Feelings, those are from the realm of spirit. You're mostly spirit. If you haven't been brought up with that belief, which a lot of people haven't, because, again, we're very sensitized to our physical senses. If we can't see it, touch it, smell it, taste it, or hear it, then it's not real, and we shouldn't pay it any mind. Quantum physics over the last 50 years is proving to us that there's a wonderful scripture by Paul, I believe, that which is seen hath not come from that which doth appear. It all comes from the world of spirit. So you probably heard about the I get to a point where my thoughts are like a sieve. The CERN Super Collider in Switzerland, I think. through the research and the building of and the experiments with the Super Collider, scientists have been able to reproduce the Big Bang, what we call the Big Bang. They have been able to reproduce the moment of creation. Because isn't that what human beings want to, we want to know. We want to know. We want to know more. We want to understand. It informs our sense of control. And what they found was that within the first, I think it's like the first 2 minutes of creation, everything was created in that moment. Every thought, every condition, every circumstance, everything was created in that moment. So everything exists in the world of potential. And it's through our focus and attention to something that converts it from a wave into a particle. And the particle is what makes it into matter, right? So what they found is in the moment of creation, within the first 2 minutes, I believe, 96% of what was created disappeared. Became, I guess, dark matter. Only 4% remained. So where did that 96% go? It exists in the realm of potential. And the realm of potential is the realm of thought and the realm of spirit. So integrating your spiritual nature into your personal viewpoint world is absolutely key to improving your life, to giving you more of a sense of control. It opens up your mind to your imagination. You know, Albert Einstein, over and over again, greatest scientist probably who ever lived, told us that imagination is more important than intellect. So integrating spirit into your personal perspective is key. Doors that you haven't even thought about. It will also show you, when you start really paying attention to your thoughts and the nature of your thoughts, the tonal quality of your thoughts, it will tell you, it will show you, it will demonstrate to you, make you aware of what influence you're under. So when you are in alignment with Source, when you are in alignment with that innate well-being, you are under the influence of your Creator. You are under influence of what we call Christ, the Christ mind. When you're under that influence, and you're always under the influence of something, when you are under the influence of the Christ mind, your world opens up and you can realize possibilities that border on the miraculous. Some are mundane, but some are miraculous. When you feel good and happy and hopeful and joyful, calm and peaceful, you are under the influence of Christ mind. And that's your objective. That's the one power. There's only one power. When you are feeling other than that, you are under the influence of what I suppose people would call evil. You're under the influence of a belief in something other than the one power. And that is a violation of spiritual law. There's only one power. If you believe that there is a power other than that, then you are violating spiritual law. And you can know that you're doing it because you're uncomfortable. So we're drawing nigh the end of our show. I highly encourage you in the coming week to think about your spirit nature. Think about ways that you can integrate spirit into your personal worldview. See what shows up for you in the coming week. See how it changes your perspective. See how it lends itself to a greater sense of control. Play with the idea that you are not only the actor on the stage, but you're the playwright. You know, that sense of personal responsibility. See how those two things shift your life in the coming week. Thank you all for your time and attention. I hope you heard something tonight that caught your attention. I do encourage my listeners to reach out to me, especially if I can help to provide more context or more content. You can reach me through my website at logospraxis.com and click on the schedule a consult tab. There's no fee. It's my honor to give my time and attention to fellow seekers. Just shoot me a quick email and I'll respond to you within 24 hours. Thanks again to Universal Energy Radio for hosting my weekly podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Find us on iTunes as well as here on Blog Talk Radio. You can go to iTunes and search on Universal Energy Radio and access any of the podcasts supported there. I guess that's the right word. Have a terrific week, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Good night.